This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
And welcome to episode 68. What did you watch this week? My name is Mike.
My name is John, and you should see the crazy hand gestures going on over here.
Okay, see, that's why when we recorded a few episodes ago together, the intro sounded so different because, like, I'm tremendously animated when we talk. With my arms, hands, movements, my voice, right? Everything. And I'm like, I can't do that in front of a friend I've known for 20 plus years. That would be awkward.
I know, right?
Did you ever watch the movie, not Kissel. Hank Azaria, I think it was, that starred in it. And it was about an old newspaper man who did it on the radio.
No, does not sound familiar.
Okay. Anyway, so there was this, I think it might've been an HBO original movie. I saw this probably 20 years ago now. I can't remember the name of it. It doesn't matter. But he was a very famous radio newspaper guy. Okay. He was news announcer. You know, he always did the radio on the news. He had a distinctive voice with which he did it in. And he, like, had this thing.
Hank Azaria? No.
Yeah. And he had a, one of those Morse code things.
Okay.
And he'd hit that while he was saying it. Well, he had this system where he would, and this is a true story movie, by the way. He had a system where he would down a ton of water. So that he had to go to the bathroom so bad so that when he did the news, he knew he had to fill like his 3 or 5 minutes, whatever it was. So the second he was done with the news, he could get up and walk away to go use the bathroom because he had to go to the bathroom that bad.
Wow.
And he would look down and he had this weird mannerism and posture, and it's just the way he delivered the message. Well, he wanted to be on TV, And obviously his style of reading the news was beautiful for radio. Was not visually pleasing for TV.
Gotcha. One of those you've got a face for radio kid?
Kinda, yeah. And so when he did finally get his first big TV thing, it was met with, what? Because he wasn't looking at the camera. He was looking down the whole time. And the second he was done, he got up and walked away. Because he had to go to the bathroom.
Okay.
So anyways, that's kind of like me. How I am when we're doing the podcast when you can't see me.
I was wondering where we were going with that.
Yeah, I'm... Move my hands around a lot, like, whatever.
So, I looked it up on IMDb. I'm not seeing it.
Maybe it wasn't Hank Azaria. It was,
Anyway.
A movie about news, radio news broadcaster.
I had to pee a lot.
Pirate radio, pump up the volume.
Oh. Great movie.
Yeah, no, I don't think that was it.
I watched that movie a lot.
Pump Up the Volume?
Yeah. Christian Slater? Happy Harry Hardon?
That's right. I haven't seen that in so long.
Samantha Mathis?
Mm-hmm. Gosh, yep. I have not seen that movie in ages.
I bet it hasn't aged well. I know I tried to watch Heathers recently, and that has not aged well.
Let's see here. Radio station films and series. Airheads?
Really, Airheads on the list? Yeah.
Pirate radio. Good morning, Vietnam! Radioland Murders, Born in Flames, Corporate FM, FM, Historias de la Radio, Mother Night, FM, Radio Days, News Radio, Tune In Tomorrow, WKRP in Cincinnati, Night Listener, Frasier, Talk to Me, Pump Up the Volume, Talk Radio. It had a single... Naked Freaks. All right. It had a single, like, name, like Kissel, or the name of the broadcaster.
Okay.
Doesn't matter. So, anyways.
Thanks, everyone. This has been an episode that I've named that movie.
I'm going to figure this out by the end of the episode, I swear.
Okay.
Anyhow, so let's talk about some shows and stuff.
Well, there's not a lot to talk about, though, this week.
No, there isn't.
And this is not laziness on our part. There really is not a lot. Like, I looked at my DVR this week, and I looked at future recordings, and there were, like, 4 shows. And it's pretty slim pickings right now as we're kind of in between some stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Game of Thrones comes back very shortly.
16th, season 7.
So we'll have that to talk about, which will be good. But, you know, Doctor Who's off. A lot of the regular shows that we've been watching were done now. I did want to point something out here, because every week I've been making a pitch about iZombie, but it's now off the air. You know, yes. Well, it's done for the season. Two different friends this week confronted me about their love of iZombie.
And it say was, confronted, like it yeah. was like they like.
Oh yeah, they got right up in my face and they started punching me and kicking me and.
Well, confrontation is where confronted comes from.
Yes, and exactly.
So was this a negative?
Oh, it was very violent. No, they actually loved it.
Oh, okay.
I guess you could say they accosted me because it was not me trying to solicit from them their feedback. One of them sent me a message and was like, "Oh my God, I had to tell you I was crying over last night's iZombie." I said, "Well, what were you crying about?" And they explained to me the episode, and I knew exactly what they were talking about, but it was third season. And I said, "Give me your thoughts. Are you enjoying this show?" And they said basically the same thing I did, you know, that the first season was really good, that they loved it. Second season was awesome, and this season has just been phenomenal.
Yeah.
Actually, three people, because I talked to my sister about the same thing, and she gave me the same feedback that iZombie is great, people should be watching it. And then out of the blue, my friend Christine, who works over at the Crime Lab,
yeah,
you know her.
I'm familiar.
Yeah, she sent me a message. We were talking the other day, and she's like, "Oh my God, I'm just sitting here eating my dinner, watching iZombie. I love this show." And I said, "What do you love about it?" "Oh, everything about it. The characters are great. I love the setting. So I'm not alone here. This is a good show, people. I'm really telling you, people out there, you need to be watching that show."
Well, oh,
it's binge worthy.
I did try to watch,
and you fell asleep.
No, I just kind of, I queued it up, I read it, I said it was 42 minutes, and I just went, "Let's watch How I Met Your Mother reruns."
So, by tried to watch it, you mean you made an attempt to put the episode on, and then said, "It's too much effort to click that button."
Kinda.
And commit.
Yeah, I mean, kinda.
You're missing out, man. I mean, I get it. This morning, I was flicking through the channels, and I had like three shows to watch for the episode tonight. But I said, "Look, Scrubs reruns," and I settled on Scrubs reruns because it's Scrubs. But I'm doing this not just for you, but for the listeners out there, and telling them, you know, we had one listener write in and say, "I'm glad that you guys always tell me what to watch." Well, I'm telling you, if you're not watching iZombie, you're missing out.
I will try to make an honest effort to watch it.
It's your loss if you don't. I get it. But, yeah, that was just, it was coincidental to me that these are two people who aren't currently listening to the podcast who just said, "Hey, by the way, I really like this show." And I said, "You know what? I'm right there with you."
All right. Sounds good.
Mike's a little distracted. He's still trying to prove himself
right. I'm trying to find the name of this damn movie. It's really annoying me. I'm trying to think. It's just bugging the crap out of me. I think it couldn't have been Hank Azaria, but I can't think of who else it could have been at this point. It's bothering me. So the wife and I finished watching Orange is the New Black.
Okay.
Season 5, 13 episodes. Season 4 ended with the which would be the start of the riot.
Right.
And the entire season was about the riot.
Oh, really?
Yes. And
really dragged it out.
Yeah, but it wasn't bad. I mean,
okay.
The timeline of this season was about 3.5 days from beginning to end of the riot. Maybe 4 max. And wife and I both agree that this is probably like one of their best seasons of
really?
The show. Yeah. She was like, "Well, maybe not the first season because that's where they established everyone," but they really only established Piper in that season. This season, I don't know, it was just something about it. It was really enjoyable. And it, of course, it ends on a cliffhanger, if you will.
Okay.
You know, like the...
To set up the next season.
Yeah. Like the final scene is, there was a group of them that were hidden in a part of the prison, and it's them, like, they're going to be confronted, if you will.
So. Okay.
But, I don't know, it was a solid season. It was really enjoyable TV. Go watch it.
See, I thought you were going to say that you watched this season and that it was one of their weakest ones. That was the impression I was getting is with your build up. But
no, it was good.
Good. Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
So definitely give it a thumbs up. Definitely we'll come back for the next season.
Yeah.
Good. Well, that's good. Like I said, I'm still a season behind. You know, I've seen the first three seasons.
Season four is a rough season to watch, but season five is actually pretty.
Maybe I'll pick it up again. I'm also two seasons behind on House of Cards. Yes, I know. I'm saying this stuff as we just admitted that we didn't have much to watch this week, but, you know, sue me. It is harder to sit down when you have a whole season or two seasons ahead of you to say, do I want to commit to this? Or I think we were talking about it a couple of weeks ago where it's hard sometimes to sit down and commit to a movie. That's an hour and a half. You know, do I really want to sit down and commit to this or do?
Dude, I had a hard time committing to a 42-minute movie.
Yeah.
42-minute episode of a TV show.
Yeah. I feel you. It happens sometimes. Now, this week, you did not watch Dark Matter?
No, I did not. Please feel free to spoil it.
Well, I'm not going to fully spoil it, but I will say that this was actually, we had talked last week about how the show was kind of going downhill and we didn't like this whole, are they good, are they bad? This week, we finally got an answer to a question from last season, which was when they went to the alternate universe, a ship warped out. And we always assumed that it was the pretty boy that had that weird thing where, like, he was actually, took somebody else's identity so that he could smuggle on board the Raza.
Yep.
And then the real guy came and found him and killed him and was now, you know, I'm the real whatever, number one.
Right.
Well, we finally find out that the ship that jumped into this place is, it had the doppelgangers of 3, 2, and the android. So we've now got, although they don't go by the numbers because they, in that universe, they never lost their memories. Right. So it's Boone, Portia, and the android. And they're over here picking up where they left off. So stealing highly coveted missiles, you know, military stuff, and generally just being bad guys, you know,
yep.
Drug smuggling, guns, gun running. And this team gets word of it because their paths start to cross and the people that are good guys, air quotes, are working with, start having run-ins with the bad versions of them. I just wanted them all to have goatees, you know, even Portia, because that's what bad universe people are.
Right.
They have the goatees. Star Trek taught us that. But no, it was interesting how it played out. You got confused a couple of times because it's obviously the same actor or the same actress playing both characters. So, you know, you'd see a scene where three is walking down a hallway and it's actually not three, it's Boone. But, you know, they look the same. It's the same actor. So it was fun in that respect. I liked it. I liked what they did with it. I would like to see them do more, but who knows? It's still a kind of a hit or miss show this season.
Cool.
Mike still hasn't found his show name.
No, I haven't. It's really bugging me. It's a one name, it's like a one word name.
But you don't even know the actor.
All I can think of is for Hank Azaria, and I know it's not him. I can picture him, but I can't.
Well, I tried looking up John Turturro because he looks kind of like Hank Azaria, but...
You didn't see anything?
No. You may have to let this one go, man.
I don't know if I can. So, John, you and I watched the movie tonight.
Yes, we did.
Called Table 19.
Yes. Yeah.
It stars Anna Kendrick.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Craig Robinson, Lisa Kudrow, Stephen Merchant's in it.
I love Stephen Merchant.
I do. It's a funny cast, and essentially, what it is it's about Table 19 is the table of randoms that should have checked thanks but no, but instead checked yes, we'll attend the wedding.
Yep. That table where you have no idea where to put this person, yep. So you throw them at that table.
Exactly.
I've never been married, but I understand the concept.
And I expected this to be a comedy.
It was really billed as a comedy,
yes.
The trailer, because you sent me the trailer, and I never watched it, but as soon as the movie started, I was like, I remember watching this trailer a while ago.
Yeah.
But the trailer billed it as a comedy, too. Really made it seem...
Yeah, like this was going to be some big old wacky thing, because they're the Breakfast Club of the wedding, the outcasts, the outsiders of the wedding, if you will.
But and almost then, to the nth degree with some of them.
Yes,
like the Indian kid there was like... a jacked up version of the character.
Well, this any kid is like a junior in high school whose mission in life is to get laid, and his mom's trying to help him.
Yeah, his mom is pushing him towards this. Like, yeah, she's calling him up, and she's like, "Oh, you got to go after this girl, and maybe that grandmother is a little older than you expected, but come on, you do something."
Right? Yeah. Ugh. But they established straight away that Anna Kendrick's character is the recently dumped ex-girlfriend of the bride's brother.
Yeah, who he's the best man.
And she was supposed to be the maid of honor, but now she is not. And she got stuck at this table and she said yes, she was still going to go.
It's kind of a weird situation. But
here's the thing. Okay, they say in the movie, too, like, I thought they said it was 6 months out. Because when you send out wedding invitations, it's greater than 6 months out.
You would think so.
It's about 6 months out. But then you guys are like, oh, no, it was only 2 months out. Well, yeah. First of all, if she was going to be the maid of honor come 2 months out and then is not going to be anymore, she had to have already had an invitation to mail back. People aren't mailing them back that soon. That, you know what I mean? Like, usually they want to know a good month plus out what the headcount's going to be.
I think we should also point out here that there was not a lot about this movie that made sense.
No, not really.
Like, I feel like each one of the characters, they pointed at a writer and said, okay, you're going to do the awkward teenager. Okay, you're going to do the married couple whose marriage is failing. Okay, you're going to do the creepy guy who's a prisoner in a halfway house. And so none of them ever really felt like they meshed.
No, they didn't.
But getting back to what we were saying, this is billed as a comedy.
Yes. And it even seems like one. There's like an event that happens where they all kind of band together and they're going to get this other guy and they're going down the hallway doing one of those walking down the hallway scenes.
We're
going
to make him pay for dumping you over text.
Exactly. They're coming up with some sort of plan to get back at him. And then he shows up and it's about 47 minutes in the movie. And it takes the hardest left turn I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Where it goes from being a comedy to just a straight up like drama.
Yeah.
Like sad, emotional, heart-wringing drama. And then the rest of the movie is not a rom-com. It's like a rom-drama.
Yeah.
A romantic movie.
Yeah.
Whatever.
It takes a left turn in like The English Patient or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, where it's just like heartbreak and tears and, you know, suddenly everybody's got these tragic stories. And, you know, this one's dying and, you know, this one came here to have an affair and, you know, it's everybody's suddenly tragic.
Yeah.
Like the comedy writer stepped out of the room for a minute and some guy ran over and was like, hee hee, I'll show them. I wanted this to be a drama all along.
I mean, and there was still elements of comedy here and there throughout the end of the movie, especially with Stephen Merchant's character.
But they were really trying to.
Yeah, but that was all background fodder.
Yeah. And ultimately, even if you take that part out, there was nothing in this movie that was not really predictable and almost eye-rollingly, you know, sigh-worthy as you're watching it. You're like, oh, this is going to happen, and then it happens. Oh, this is going to happen. I mean, between Mike and I and his wife, we predicted every beat of this movie, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
There were a few misses there. You know, I thought the guy was in porn, but he was actually a prisoner. But it was not really original at all. And I don't think it was
even like the Anna Kendrick character, the one that was dumped, meets a guy there, and I'm like, oh, he's not in this wedding. Nope. He's a wedding crasher. As a matter of fact, there's another wedding going on. He's involved in that one somehow. And he was.
He was.
So, as my wife said, well, we don't ever have to watch that again.
Yeah.
When we were done watching it.
Yeah. Basically, this was it was a good way to kill an hour and 30 minutes. It was not a terrible movie, but I definitely would not give it a hard sell.
Just couldn't do it in good faith.
No. I would not tell everybody that you need to go out and watch this because honestly, you don't. Even if you're like, well, I like romantic comedies, it's not really a full romantic comedy. Well, I like good dramas and heartfelt ones. You're going to be disappointed because it doesn't have a lot of heart. These people are either grossly underwritten or they're terrible people. I would not recommend it.
I would not recommend it either.
No.
This does not get any positive endorsement from me.
No, it does not. Anna Kendrick, if you're listening, I'm sorry, but you've churned out like 30 movies in the past year, so you knew that there were going to be some.
And I typically like your movies, by the way.
Yeah, he's saying that to Anna Kendrick, not to me.
Right, right. You were just talking to Anna Kendrick, so I was also addressing her.
Well, I addressed her myself.
It was co-addressage to the same person.
That's all right. I somehow doubt she's listening to our podcast, but well, if she does...
she's from Maine. We're in Maine. You never know.
Yeah, but you notice that, like, you when never she's on red know. Carpets or she's doing interviews for movies, she never says, yeah, back when I was in Maine, yeah, I grew up in Maine. No, she's put us behind her. She's not from Maine anymore. She's from Hollywood. Hollywood kid.
She is from Hollywood.
So, what else did you watch for shows this week, Mike? I believe that there were two of them that we both watched that we could talk about.
Oh, okay. Well, do you want to talk about Blood Drive then?
Blood Drive.
Or do you want to talk about Walter Winchell? The name of the movie is Winchell. Boom. Stanley Tucci was the actor in the movie.
Stanley Tucci?
Yeah.
Hank Azaria? That's a stretch.
It is a stretch. But all I could think of was Hank Azaria.
Yeah.
So it's about Walter Winchell.
Okay.
Came out in 1998.
Do you feel better?
I feel amazing right now. Like, I feel a big weight has been lifted off my shoulders.
Like you just dropped a big old deuce?
I feel like I have not let anyone down. I feel like I have not disappointed anyone.
Honestly?
That I've come through in the end.
If you had closed your laptop and we had walked away after this, I would not have felt that you had disappointed me. I wouldn't have been, like, sending you messages like, Mike, I'm really feeling let down after the other night. I really wanted to know the name of that movie that I'll never watch.
I would have disappointed myself.
I see.
It's a good flick.
Yeah. I'll never watch it, but I'll take your word for it. The whole point of it was not that it was a good flick. It was to explain your proclivity for hand gestures.
Fair enough.
But hey, if you heard all this, everybody, and you're like, I really want to watch this now.
It's called Winchell. It's a good flick. Okay. Blood Drive.
Blood Drive. The Crimson Halls of Cain Hill.
I don't want to say this is the weakest episode so far.
I do.
But this is the weakest episode so far. And even to that statement, it was still pretty freaking nuts.
Oh, it was.
Yeah.
This one, more than any other one, reminded me of a standalone bad 80s horror movie.
Oh, yeah.
The main story here was that... we got a commercial in the very beginning for, what was it, snacks, candy?
Some sort of, yeah, this candy. And if you read, there's like a fine print zipping across the screen.
Yeah.
Don't eat this if you're pregnant. Da-da-da-da-da may cause homicidal tendencies. Yeah. Yep.
And it was a pretty homicidal commercial because the guy, like, you know, it's like an ice cream truck pulls up in a nice sunny neighborhood. And a guy runs up there and he orders a candy bar and he's eating it. And they're playing Sugar Sugar by the Archies, was it?
Yeah, I believe so.
And he keeps eating more and more until the guy's out of stuff. And when the guy says that he's out of stuff, he drags him out of the truck and then beats him to death.
And then starts stabbing him with head shears.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, we don't find it out till later. But basically the story is that the Heart Corporation decided that they wanted to rework sugar so that it didn't make you fat anymore.
Yeah.
But instead, the side effect is now it makes you psychotic.
Yeah. And essentially, they used Cain Hill as their testing ground on the crazy people.
So they told them all, you know, happy Halloween and gave them out candy and the inmates went crazy. So when we get there with Arthur and Grace,
yes.
The guy greets them at the door and he's like, happy Halloween. And they're like, it's July, but they've been torturing and killing people for almost a year now.
Since October, yeah.
And it makes you kind of wonder how these people are still alive, because where's the food coming from?
I didn't question it.
No, it was definitely an 80s horror movie kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was pretty knocking futs.
Not only that, okay, so that we'll get into in a second. But we had the secondary story in this. Well, we had three stories, because we had that. We also had the flashback of how Grace got into the race in the first place.
Yes, which explains
her sister and the club and the fact that for some reason Slink was a DJ at the time.
And also we find out from a picture in the hall that Slink was alive and worked at the Sane Asylum back in 1957.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's obviously very old. But then we have the secondary story, which is lovingly dubbed The Milkening of Christopher Carpenter.
Yeah, this was fucked up.
This is, okay, Christopher Carpenter is, as you've been listening to the show, the black cut cop that we talk about who always has to have an enormous black bar over where his penis is. And this time it was standing straight up because he was having...
Yeah, he was having a dream.
Yeah, as he was running naked through a field and there were flowers and tall grass and stuff. And this gets more bizarre. And I mean, this show, it trades in bizarre. Like, this show is bizarre. Yeah. These scenes are fucked up.
Yeah, like, okay, so the little android girl there that lured him down there that's now captured him and is torturing, she needs to collect 5 bodily fluids. But, like, all of them are collected in a very, except for the last one, is collected in a very gruesome way, but the most difficult way possible to get.
Way over the top.
Yeah, I mean, way, way, way over the top. And, you know, in the end, after she...
Because it was, okay.
Violently jacks him off with a sample of his semen.
Blood?
Yeah.
Urine?
Yep.
Semen?
Yep.
People matter.
Poop, yeah.
And then a tear. Saline. Yeah.
A tear, yeah. That was the last thing she needed was a tear, and she collected it on a little slide, glass slide, you know.
Like Dexter would use?
Right, yeah. And then said, this is actually the only thing I needed.
But, like...
Why did you do the rest?
Like Mike was saying, the semen collection, she was like, do you want the probe or the hand? And he's like, make it the hand. Yeah. And... anybody who's ever done this to collect their own samples for whatever reason knows the method. But she took her little robot arm and went right to town.
Yeah, I thought she was going to rip it off. Or at the very least, you know, rip the skin off.
Yeah, and he seemed to be very uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's what brought the tear on. And she's like, oh, I got what I actually needed.
Yeah, the fecal matter was collected by leaving him a beverage. God. And saying, you know, drink up, you're going to need your strength. And then she's like listing off all this stuff that was in there. And it was multiple different kinds of laxatives, yep. Fibers, etc. And it just, it wasn't enough that she was making him poop.
Right.
It was that she then stood between his open legs.
Put a rubber glove on the one up to her shoulder.
Yes. And then repeatedly
violently
punched him.
Violently punched him in the
head. Yeah, yeah, like penetrating his anal cavity with her entire arm repeatedly. Yeah. This was...
I'm guessing there was no lotion either, folks.
Yeah.
No lubricant.
I saw nothing there. I mean, granted, he probably had something brewing that wanted to come out, but... Wow. And what is the purpose behind all this? We know that she says she's trying to get him ready to be part of Heart Corporation.
Yeah.
It seems more like she's just torturing him.
I think it's straight up torture.
Yeah.
No, there's no other way to describe it. Because again, at the end of the day, all she needed was a tear. She didn't need anything else.
Now, I was wondering this. When she got on top of him to get the semen sample, she was topless.
Yeah.
It looked like she had some flesh-colored pasties over the nipple areas.
But there was no exposed nipple or anything.
Right. But they didn't put a black bar across.
Because there's no nipples, so that means they're not breasts.
Right. Right. I couldn't tell if they were trying to be like, oh, she's an android, so we didn't need to put nipples on her, or...
I think that's what they were going for.
Yeah. That is all happening, like, interspersed throughout. But basically, Arthur and Grace decide early on, hey, this is a giant asylum. There's maniac people here. Let's split up. And... Yeah. And they had made the deal last week with the scholar to buy them some time.
Yep.
He basically sabotaged the little box. That was messed up too. Slink and his little buddy there with the drill in the mouth. And
yeah, I don't get that one.
Yeah. He's got like a power drill and he's getting his teeth drilled. And then there was this guy that, you know, was doing the drilling and Slink was like, you better not tell me that this doesn't work or I'm going to use that on your urethra. And the guy like spreads his legs and goes, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of creepy.
Yeah. So, they escaped, so basically Slink goes to Ribbone and says, hey, you want revenge for Arthur burning your face?
Well, hold on real quick. Let's not forget to go back and we find Slink, like, sitting in a chair with, like, a diaper on, and there's, like, a tube coming out from his groin that clearly has a yellow fluid in it, almost like, and then the tube goes into that guy's mouth.
Yeah.
Who's sitting there kind of on the ground drinking Slink's urine?
Yeah.
it direct from the bladder, apparently.
This is a messed up show, but it really took a new turn into uncharted territory this week.
Yeah, it did. It really did.
So yeah, basically, long and the short of it is they fight through the asylum.
And they're there looking for her sister.
Yes, who it turns out she's not even there anymore. She got transferred. but one thing that was interesting plot-wise is that all this time Grace has been saying she needs to rescue her sister from the asylum. Arthur had said, Hart put her in the asylum to get you to race. And she's like, oh, well, then we've got to rescue her. But we see in the flashback, she put her sister in the asylum.
Yes, she did.
And was, you know, basically a hands-off approach, was like, oh, my sister's been doing red. She's all messed up. You guys take care of her.
Yep. Had a lot to do with that. She was more interested in hooking up with this guy named Primo.
Yeah.
Than watching and taking care of her little sister.
Karma, his name's not Primo. He's called Primo because he won the last race.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
Still love the show.
Yeah, it's a good show.
Next week is going to be messed up because next week has the Love Bus.
Nice.
And it looks like the bodily fluids that are extracted on there or come out, unintended, have a zombifying effect on some people.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
That would be great. All those zombies we saw, all those zombies, all the, all the people we saw killed earlier are going to come back.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Still a great show.
Yes, I still enjoy this show. Love it. Did you watch any more Preacher?
Yes, I've seen the first three episodes.
I, too, have seen the first three episodes. And I got to say, it's three episodes of some pretty great television.
It really is. Like,
great storytelling, kind of fast-paced action. Really good.
That first episode, we'll break them down, you know, one at a time here. So the first episode, they're leaving the town. You know, it's right where we left them. They're taking off out of the town. They're like, to hell with this place.
And it seems like they have no idea of the explosion that happened.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they don't find out that until much later on. But yeah, they've gone out to look for God because God's missing. And, the scene, okay, so they get pulled over at one point. This was the highlight of the episode for me. They get pulled over and the cops take them, you know, they're arresting them or whatever. Cassidy.
Yeah.
And he's freaking out because it's sunny.
Sorry, hold on. It's even before then, one cop shows up to, it puts their lights on and they make the conscious decision to not stop and to continue and get into a high speed pursuit.
Yes.
And all to them singing along to Come and Eileen on the radio cranked on loud. That was amazing.
It was so amazing.
And then
I loved it.
They ran out of gas.
Yes.
And that's why they stopped.
That'll end a high speed chase pretty quickly. Tulip refuses to leave the car because that's her car, Jesse. Yep. Jesse, I'm not leaving my car. So now the cops, of course, it's a high-speed chase, so now multiple officers are involved, and they're taking Cassidy out of the car, and he's like, I need my umbrella. And that one cop is like, he's going to burst into flames.
Yeah.
The sheriff's like, give me that. And then Cassidy starts smoking, and they're like, well, I guess that was
And he runs and dives in the back of the car, yeah.
Yep. But then, all of a sudden, one of the cops gets the top half of his face blown off. Like,
violently.
Just from the lower jaw up, his head just disappears. And they are getting shot at by an unknown assailant. And it's ripping. I mean, it's moving vehicles. The bullets are blowing holes in cars.
These are like a 50 caliber round, essentially, except it's being fired from a handgun.
A revolver, no less.
Yeah.
See, we don't see that at first, but we see it a little later on. But yeah, they're getting hit hard out on a desert highway, nobody else around. And it was kind of a fun scene watching Cassidy try not to burn up in the sun.
Oh, that was hilarious.
And they're trying to siphon off gas because even though they've got all these police cruisers that they could jump in and take off, the keys are still in them. She's like, no, I'm not leaving my car.
And they use the cop's intestine as a hose to siphon the gas, and we come back.
He's like, it's your car. There you go. And she does it.
She's got blood all over her face.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of gross thinking
about it. It was really gross.
Yeah. But
we see shortly thereafter that the guns were being fired by the Saint of Killers.
Yes, the Saint of Killers, the gunman from the first season that they did the slow build on.
Yeah, which was a great slow build.
It was a great slow build.
Especially seeing how much time they're getting now.
And essentially we learned at one point, either in this episode or episode two, that the gunman is tracking where they are based on Jesse using the Genesis voice.
Yeah, because Tulip tells him early on, he told a cop, he told him to do something and the cop did it. And she's like, I don't think you should do that.
Yeah.
She's giving him the moral thing, She's like, he's like, but it works. She's like, no, it's just, you wouldn't like it if somebody made you do things against your will. So why are you doing it to them? I don't think it's right. You shouldn't do it. So she's like, she's basically slapping him down and saying, you can't do this.
She has a code of ethics in her mind that she lives by, and she's not happy that he doesn't follow.
Right. And it comes up a couple times later on, either in that episode or the next episode, where he's like, I really want to use Genesis. She's like, no. It's not right. He's like, but it would be so easy. She goes, no, you're being lazy right now.
Yeah.
Beat the crap out of them. But yeah, he goes to see another preacher friend of his who has a girl locked in a metal cage out in the garage. And
is that episode one or two?
That was episode one, because episode two focused completely on the magic show.
Okay. I watched them back to back to back.
Yeah.
So it kind of, it's a blur.
Yeah. We could cross over anyway. But,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, and this guy, they told him that they're looking for God, and he essentially sent them to Vegas, I guess, or something Vegas-like.
New Orleans.
Yeah. So he had a girl locked in the garage in a cage and told them that it's none of their business, but basically some of his parishioners asked for his help with things like this girl was addicted to running away from home and having sex.
Yeah.
And her parents didn't like that, so he locks her in a cage.
That seems reasonable.
To get all the demons out of her.
That's a reasonable response from responsible adults.
Absolutely. And so they spend the night there, and then they take off because Jesse sees the Saint of Killers. Yes. And is unaffected by Genesis.
Yeah, that's a...
He tells him to stop, and he doesn't stop.
And very alarming discovery for him.
Yep. So then they take off, and the guy, the Saint of Killers goes into the other preacher, and he's like, I can make you tell me. The other preacher pulls out a little knife, and he goes, that won't hurt me. He goes, no, but it'll keep me from telling you.
Yeah, and stabs himself in the chest.
Yeah. I would have thought he would have gone for the throat, because, then he really can't talk, but he stabbed himself right in the heart, pretty much, and killed himself. So
that's kind of how the first one ends.
Yep. And then the second one was...
Yeah, I really, 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 really enjoyed this story of DeBlanc and what he was doing after. Because at the end of the first season, the Santa Killers comes up and he kills the other angel.
Yes.
And leaves DeBlanc, who is distraught over what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And in this one, he is...
because if you recall from the first season, these angels, remember we had those scenes where they'd be in the middle of a brawl. And they would die, and then immediately a flash of light, and they would reappear outside of the room.
Yes, absolutely.
So there were bodies everywhere, because they just can't die. When they die, they come right back.
That was fantastic, by the way.
So we get to see more of that in this episode.
Because he's depressed, and he keeps trying to kill himself, and it's not working out well for him in any way, shape, or form.
But we get to watch all the attempts, and it's hilarious.
He hung himself. He suffocated himself with a plastic bag.
Yep.
Shot himself.
Yep.
I mean...
I want to say he put a toaster in the bathtub, or am I thinking of something else?
No, I don't know. Maybe that happened, but the one I'm thinking of, he's at the club.
Mm-hmm.
The guy's singing, and for some reason they come down to see if he'll sing whatever.
Yeah.
And he grabs the microphone and he drops it in a bucket of ice and water sitting next to him and electrocutes him and kills him. But then he poof comes out and walks through on top of the stage, and the crowd just erupts with applause, because why wouldn't they? They just watch this guy die, and there he is.
Yeah, it's a magic trick to them.
Yeah, and then that essentially leads to him killing himself every show and then walking out like, hey, I'm fine, don't worry about it.
Yep, he finally has purpose again, so he's feeling good.
What do they do with all the bodies?
I'm wondering. Do they just chuck them out in a dumpster or something?
I don't know, man, but that's a lot of bodies,
So basically, Jesse and his crew show up to meet with DeBlanc and talk to him about God and where he is and what's going on. And
yep.
He doesn't really want to help him.
Well, initially, no.
Not at all. And then Cassidy's like, give me, 48 hours.
God, that was messed up.
And then they had this whole big montage of them doing drugs together. In fact, the first speedball he gives the DeBlanc kills him.
Yes.
And he walks out of the bathroom, just looks at him and goes, all right, less heroin next time.
It was great.
I thought that was fantastic.
But it was a messed up trip of them like running around the hotel room and pillow fighting and building blanket forts,
taking them down and then eating and various things they are eating and on and on and on. And it was very entertaining.
Meanwhile, Jesse and Tulip got kind of romantic, and then she said she wanted to get married and then decided she didn't want to get married. I could have cared less. I was enjoying DeBlanc and Cassidy myself.
Oh, DeBlanc's story was amazingly awesome. Yeah.
But then, unfortunately, the Saint of Killers has to come calling.
Well, real quick. So yeah. Cassidy works really hard at getting DeBlanc to trust him, and ultimately he does.
Yep.
And then DeBlanc reveals that, Saint of Killers is coming after you because we asked him to.
Yeah.
And we control him, so we'll just tell him to stop, and he'll stop.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't work.
No.
That didn't work at all.
They unleash the dog, and the dog is not going back on the leash.
Exactly.
Yeah, so DeBlanc is now dead.
Yes, because he tells Jesse and everyone that he will tell DeBlanc to go look for someone else, and then...
The Saint of Killers.
Yeah, the Saint of Killers, that is. To go look, and that he was going to tell him all this. Like, hey, I put the hit out, I'm going to cancel the hit, and he'll listen to me and on and on and on, and then we get to the end, and...
Boom.
Yeah.
Goes to Dynamite. And everyone's really disappointed in the audience because they're used to seeing him die and then come right back. And this time he just dies.
Yeah. And he even told, Killer of Spirits?
Saint of Killers.
He even told the Saint of Killers, you have, continue your mission. He told them where they were going.
Yeah.
And then, basically asked him to kill him. And he did.
But basically, we've heard that God really likes jazz music.
Yes, and that's why they're in New Orleans. And the other thing is that... what's
her name? Tulip?
Tulip has a backstory we're slowly learning about where basically she was working for this guy, probably some sort of mob-related thing or whatever, and it had to do with New Orleans and...
Yep.
Yeah.
And then the third episode, a little slower.
Yes.
But they get to New Orleans... We also, the majority of the first part of this episode is learning Eugene's backstory, who is Assface.
Who is basically reliving the same day for eternity. And then he finally manages to get out. And he's walking down the hallway, and then Hitler comes out of another room.
Right. But we find out, because it was always said that, the whole town hated him because of what happened to this girl who's, in a vegetative state, and... We finally get to learn that basically she called him over and said, my boyfriend broke up with me and he doesn't want to be with me and I'm going to kill myself. And she had a shotgun and she was going to kill herself. And you're my best friend. And he talked her down and she's like, okay, I can live. And she had a 10-page suicide note. And after he talked her down, he's like, oh, we don't need this anymore. So he lit it on fire and threw it in the trash can. So there's no evidence anymore.
Correct.
And then she's like, you're my best friend, and puts her head on his shoulder. He goes in for the kiss. And
she recoils.
She
just got punched in the throat type of recoil.
And she even says, ew.
Yeah. What are you doing?
And then she's so distraught by this that, no, you know what? I do need to kill myself. Grabs the shotgun, goes to blow her own head off. He goes, no. And, half interrupts her.
Yeah.
And so it blows the top of her head off and the brains come out. The
top left portion of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's scrambling on the bed, trying to stick the brains back in her head. He's like, let me put this back in here. Let me put this. And she's blinking.
Yeah.
So he's freaking out even more. And then the door's locked and her mother's banging on the door and you open this door right now. And he tries to escape out the window and he can't because he can't lift it. So he grabs the shotgun and tries to shoot himself, but it doesn't go off. So now he's looking in the barrel what's going on? The Bugs Bunny thing.
I kept waiting for it to go off.
Yeah. But then we hear boom, and the screen goes black, and we know that that's why his face looks like it does.
Right.
But yeah, he's in hell, apparently.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where Hitler is.
I would definitely say so. He's in hell.
But then the whole New Orleans thing, it was a little slow for me. Jesse says, we're looking for God. And this guy's like, oh, come with me. And like everybody in town seems to know that if you're looking for God, you go here.
Yeah.
And they take him to this, you know, underground place in a back
room. There's a furry.
Yeah. Basically a guy dressed in a Dalmatian suit with a woman holding his leash.
Yeah.
And they're all like, this is God. Yeah. And then it was just the slow burn of Tulip revealing she doesn't want to be down here because this guy's looking for her. Yep. And in the end of the episode, he picks her up. But then there's the group of men in white, which was a little odd.
Yeah, some sort of religious zealots who come after
that girl.
Yeah.
The lounge singer who Jesse was sent to. Yeah. He's like, I heard you could tell me where God is. She's like, yeah, he's down the road in the Dalmatian suit.
Yeah, and they come after her because she knows too much, basically.
Yeah. And she's got a baby and she's got to get out of town. So Jesse helps and, you know, tells them to stop and then beats the crap out of all four of them.
Yeah. Yeah, he really does. Like,
that's some mad fighting skills.
Some major league butt there.
I was remembering back to the first season when, like, he broke that guy's arm and kicked some ass. And,
yeah.
And then she's like, you know, oh, how did you get them to stop? And he's like, I have a power. And she's like, could you make me stop if I wanted to kill you? And he goes, stop.
Kiss you.
Kiss you, yes.
Yeah.
And he makes her stop. And then he puts her in a taxi and gets her and her kid away so that they can get to the airport and go stay with her sister. But it was all a ruse.
Yes.
She works with the men in white, and even her blonde hair was a ruse. She really has dark hair. Yeah. And she now knows that he has something very powerful and that they have to stop him, and they put it on this other guy. I couldn't even remember what she said, but like...
Basically, she said, put him as a high alert status. Yeah. You know, we need to go get people out there in helicopters, checking on him, on and on and on. So.
It goes on this guy's desk, and it's some guy with a scar over his eye, and... So now there's going to be more players looking for Genesis. Yeah, good show.
Really good show. Really great first couple of episodes.
Yeah.
You know, I really, really enjoyed them.
I know that when the graphic novel takes place across the world, and when they first came out with the show, they said that they were going to keep it local because they weren't sure how they were going to do and if the ratings would be there, and so they just wanted to make it
perfect sense.
Absolutely. Now they're taking it across the country.
Yeah.
I watched a couple of movies this week.
Okay, what'd you watch?
Well, I watched that Table 19 with you.
Okay, yeah, we
did. And then I watched two rather disappointing movies, so I won't go too deep on them. Hot Tub Time Machine 2.
Yeah, I'm not going to bother ever.
It was on Comedy Central, so it was already edited a little bit. I liked the first one. You and I watched it together.
Yeah, I enjoyed the first one.
When I saw that John Cusack wasn't coming back for the second one, I was like, I was not that into it. It was rehashing the same thing, except for this time they go into the future.
Yep.
And, you know, their lives have fallen apart, so they've got to fix it up. It's not worth sitting down and really watching. The first one was good. The second one, not so much. Same thing with Masterminds. I wanted to see this when it came out because it's Zach Galifianakis. It's Owen Wilson. It's Kristen Wiig. Kate McKinnon.
For all intents and purposes, it should be a good movie.
It should be. Yes. And Zach Galifianakis plays this messed up guy who works for Loomis Fargo. You know, he's just a dunce who works for Loomis Fargo. And Kristen Wiig kind of like seduces him, but like not really seduces, but like flirts with him and gets in good with him. And then she's hanging out with Owen Wilson and these other scummy guys. And they're like, hey, you should get him to help you rob Loomis Fargo. And so they do, and they rob Loomis Fargo to the tune of like $17
million. Jeez, oh, crow.
And, but then it's like, you know, they tell him to go hide out in Mexico, and they'll send him money. They give him $20,000 taped to his ass.
I think they're lying.
Yeah. And it was just, beyond that, it was just like stupid comedy stuff. Like, you know, he's swimming out in the waters down in Mexico, and it's beautiful, and there's coral and stuff, but he has a hot dog.
Yeah.
Because he wants to lure over an eel. And then the moray eel grabs hold of his arm and he's like, oh, get it off, get it off. Yeah. So it was not worth it. I was disappointed.
That's too bad.
But the other movie that I watched that I was not disappointed in was Spider-Man Homecoming.
Heard a lot of great things.
I will not go spoilery on this because it is just out this weekend. I mean, you haven't seen it yet. Most of our listeners haven't seen it yet. I will say this. This was a very good movie. Unfortunately, I feel like Wonder Woman has spoiled me. I never thought that I'd say those words. But
I know. One of them was so good.
It was. And it kind of made this one a little bit dimmer, the light of this one a little bit dimmer. But it was really more a story about Peter Parker than Spider-Man, which was very refreshing.
Okay. Yeah, it's different.
The villain, the Vulture, was very believable.
Nice.
Very well done. I could very much forgive the fact that this is not the Adrian Toomes from the comics, but they made him really believable. The timeline gets a little weird because when we open the movie, it's right after the Chitauri attack New York.
Okay.
Then it says 8 years later, and we pick up 8 years later. And then it says 6 months later, because the 8 years later is Civil War, when we're meeting Spidey for the first time.
Okay.
And we get to see, like, parts of Civil War, you know, when he was introduced and he was fighting. And right. then it's 6 months later with, you know, now we can actually have the movie progress.
Nice.
Yeah. It was definitely a story about Peter Parker. It was definitely well done. I still, to this day, do not agree with the decision to make Aunt May a sex symbol.
Yeah, I don't get that.
Because
every time there's a new Aunt May, she gets younger and younger as time goes on.
It was three different times in this. Like, Robert Downey Jr. was like, hey, what about May? You know, what's she doing? Then the owner of the bodega down the street was talking in Italian to the guy behind the counter. And he's like, you know, he goes, hey, how's May doing? Peter's like, oh, she's doing good. And he leans over the counter and he's like, she's a hot Italian woman in Italian. But then Peter speaks Italian. So he's like, oh, you know, Peter goes, how's your daughter doing? And it's like, whoa. And then later on, some of the kids in school were like, oh, yeah, May's really hot.
Yeah, that's just weird. Aunt May's not hot.
And Peter, for all those wondering, Peter is 15 in this. Tony calls him 14 at one point, and he goes, I'm 15. So that clears up the age thing. He's not a senior. He's like a sophomore.
Well, hopefully going forward,
yeah.
you know, the new movies, the new collection season or whatever, you know, they stay true to this version of the character now that they've established again.
Yep. Two other things of note. One, the opening thing that they always do with Marvel, you know, and they've got the newer version where it's like Marvel and you see the scenes from the different movies. One thing that they changed on this was they played a rock version of the Spider-Man theme. So it was like...
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so giving a nod to that. And secondly, there are two PSs. There's one midway through the credits, which is good.
Yep.
There's one at the end of the credits, which is one of the best PSs I've seen in Marvel history.
Oh, wow. That's saying something.
It's great.
That's saying something.
Yes. Just because it really fits in with the movie in an awesome way.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed it. So... we'll talk about this more once a little time has gone by.
Yeah, I do want to go see it.
Yeah. But definitely, big thumbs up.
Nice.
Wonder Woman was still better. I know it's apples and oranges, but talking superhero movies, Wonder Woman just...
I can totally see it, yeah.
It hit every note. And this was a really good movie, but having just seen Wonder Woman twice, I'm like, it's not quite there. You know, there were just a few things in this movie where you're like, I wish it could have been more.
It's almost there, but it's just not quite yet.
Oh, and I will say this, too, because it's kind of hinted at in the movie, but unless you're really a Spider-Man fan, there's a lot of nods to Spider-Man fans, and it's set up for Spider-Man fans later on. But this is a young version of Spider-Man just working out, okay? In most Spider-Man movies that you've seen, he's swinging through New York, through the skyscrapers, all over the place.
Yep.
In this one, we've all seen the previews. We've all seen that scene where he's on the Washington Monument. He jumps over the helicopter. He is scared to death being that high on the Washington Monument, which is not even a skyscraper.
Right, no.
So this is, like a lot of this is him running through neighborhoods or trying to web swing but not having anything tall to web swing from.
Fair enough.
So it's things that we've always wondered about, you know, like where does his web go when he tries to swing through a neighborhood? And these are small neighborhoods, so it's definitely the early versions of Spider-Man like that. So
I like that, though.
It was really...
I like it because... Okay, I did enjoy the Amazing Spider-Man movies, but it's almost like he went from being a teenager to get bit to being a full-grown adult and knows everything about the Spider-Man, what he can and can't do, what he has to do. I mean, like, it was just too quickly established, I guess.
I will also say this. You may remember this, you may not. Without giving any spoilers, in this movie, Karen is Jennifer Connelly.
Oh.
That's all I'll say.
Okay.
So when you're introduced to Karen, just know that it's Jennifer Connelly.
Okay, fair enough.
And that's kind of that's cool. So.
That is cool.
Yeah. Those were the only movies that I watched. Mm-hmm. saw a couple of trailers. I think you saw a couple of trailers.
Yeah, of the trailers I watched, there's nothing worth talking about.
No, no.
Like, yeah, you recommended watching this one called Geostorm with
Gerard Butler.
Gerard Butler, and I was just like, wow.
It's a disaster movie, and
it's a disaster movie, but it's just it's a comedy. Yeah, disaster movies aren't supposed to be funny.
No,
you can have comic relief. You can have a guy that drops a one-liner here or there, but to actually just
And like I said, I watched Daddy's Home 2 trailer, and I said, "Why did they need to make a second movie? I thought the first one was terrible because I never watched it. I assumed it was terrible."
Yeah.
And apparently in this one, their fathers are here, and it's Mel Gibson and John
Lithgow. Yeah, and John Lithgow is Will Ferrell's dad.
Which does look hilarious. But,
yeah, it does look hilarious. And then, you know,
Mel Gibson.
Mel Gibson, thank you very much.
Wahlberg's dad.
Yeah, Mel Gibson being Mark Wahlberg's dad is kind of spot on.
Yeah, yeah. Because they're the tough guys and the strong guys.
Oh, yeah. Good for Gibson for getting himself a role like
that. Yeah.
Kind of buried himself for a little while there.
And I only had one news item, and it's a very, very tenuous rumor.
Yeah.
But apparently somebody was digging through some blog for this British actress, and somebody was asking. I didn't even, like, fully understand all the logic behind it, but basically this news outlet picked up on the fact that she had written a blog recently about Doctor Who, and somebody was like, oh, are you going to be the next Doctor? And she, like, sidestepped and avoided making any kind of committal answer to it. So suddenly they're like, oh, my God, is the new Doctor really going to be a female? Is this going to be her? And nobody has come forth to deny that yet. But they have said recently that Doctor Who and Dirk Gently will be in Hall H at San Diego Comic-Con this year. And that we will be seeing Peter Capaldi for the last time. We may see the new Doctor in Hall H.
Okay, that'd be a great unveiling.
It would.
That'd be, need to be the right audience for it.
Yep, and it would be the last time that Stephen Moffat will probably be in Hall H. It's the last time Peter Capaldi will be there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah.
See, that would be a lot of fun to go to someday, but I just... Oof.
Everything that I've heard is that, like, the Hall H is the main hall for the big announcements and stuff, and that people will line up, like, 10 hours ahead of time just to get in there and sometimes get turned away because they're at capacity.
Absolutely.
That doesn't sound like fun to me, that part.
No, it doesn't, and there's just so many people there. It doesn't seem like – I mean, it was bad enough for Rhode Island Comic Con. There was enough people there where it was kind of just like, all right, this is enough.
Yeah, but, shuffling shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah, exactly, but, man, it'd still be fun to go down there sometime.
Yeah, I agree. So,
you know, I was just thinking when you talk about San Diego.
Yeah.
And this is non-topic related here, but I was talking to a Border Patrol agent up in Copan Gora who was calling a traffic complaint.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to call him back about something, get some more information or whatever. He made the comment of, oh, yeah, they never even see OUIs up here at this border. He goes, like, I came from a bigger border station. Oh, yeah, where were you? San Diego. San Diego to Copan Gora. Talk about a culture shock. Guy goes like, yeah, holy crap, there's nothing about here but moose and trees.
Pretty much, yeah.
Can you imagine going from working like San Diego Border Patrol or being at the San Diego Comic-Con and then now you're going to come and go to, you know, a comic book shop? That's the equivalent. You're going to a local comic book shop.
That's like our buddy Paul, who lived out in California.
Yeah.
And, you know, would tell us all about how it would take him an hour to drive 5 miles to his work.
Yes, exactly.
And then he transplanted up here to Maine. I'm like, how does that even work? That's going to be crazy. So, I get it.
He likes it.
That's funny. So, yeah, that was kind of a light podcast this week. But
yeah, it is. It's going to be a little bit more lighter next week, kind of, because I am on vacation and I am going camping all week. Nice. So, I don't know what I'm going to have time to watch or whatnot.
Well, we may have to skip a week and come back with a vengeance after Game of Thrones comes on. It would kind of be appropriate to have episode 69 be a Game of Thrones-themed episode, but that's just the pervert 12-year-old in me.
I think you're right, though. But that would give us some time to watch some Game of Thrones, Blood Drive, a couple episodes of Preacher.
Yep. So
we'll see.
So you may see that, folks. You know, we'll try to let you know on our Facebook page if that's what's going to happen. But
and also, there's going to be a new... website up here on the nerdylegion.com, a new way that they're loaded. And if you subscribe through iTunes, you shouldn't see any interruption. But if you subscribe through other ways, like I use Podkicker on mine to
download the new episodes, you may have to do a search again for the podcast and create a new link.
You heard that correct, folks. Mike downloads his own podcast.
I need the numbers.
He likes the sound of his own voice.
I don't listen to it. I just download it and delete it. Hey, it's a download. I'm just padding the numbers.
Well, for that matter, you should be sitting at work like download, delete, download, delete, download, delete.
No.
Most popular on Nerdy Legion.
I download it the one time.
Okay.
I'm like, all right, that's good. Yeah. Hell. All right. Well, I'm at Superstar Mel.
I'm at the Quantum Geek. That's G33K.
The show is at What Did You Watch? And of course, the Facebook, What Did You Watch This Week? Check us out there. And yeah, thanks.
Thanks, everybody. Talk to you next week. Maybe.
Maybe not.